Welcome to this deep dive. If you're joining us today, I know exactly why you're here. You have that persisting curiosity about how complex biological systems actually operate at the fundamental level, and you're looking for the signal without all the textbook jargon.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're aiming for today.
Today, we have a mission perfectly suited for you. We're going to decipher the dark matter of human genetics. Our source material is a massive, highly anticipated 2026 study published in Nature by Siraj and colleagues. And it really is an unprecedented attempt to map the exact single nucleotide genetic switches that drive human disease.
It absolutely is. It's a study that fundamentally shifts our approach to genomic interpretation because, you know, for well over a decade, genome-wide association studies, or GWAS, have allowed us to link certain regions of our DNA to specific diseases. Hmm. But those studies typically only provide a statistical correlation to a broad genomic neighborhood. Basically, they give us the zip code of the risk, not the exact house. Pinpointing the precise causal variant, the actual biological switch that flips to cause the disease that's been a persistent bottleneck in modern genetics.
Which is incredibly frustrating. I was actually thinking about the sheer scale of this last night.
Yeah.
It's like long nights under bright screens, tracing letters in the code. You have hundreds of thousands of variants that just whisper, waiting for the road to be discovered. We watch these tiny changes trying to tell which ones explode into a disease.
That's a great way to put it. We're looking for those silent lines that hold a promise, folded in the ode of our DNA. Our goal today is to examine how these researchers systematically tested hundreds of thousands of these individual genetic changes to identify which ones actually drive disease mechanisms.
Okay, let's unpack this. How did they structurally set up an experiment to test all those suspects? Because the sheer scale of the data pool is intimidating. I mean, they pulled 221,412 fine-mapped trait-associated variants from massive repositories like the UK Biobank and GTX.
Yeah, testing over 200,000 individual genetic variations requires more than just standard laboratory techniques. To physically manage that scale, they utilized massively parallel reporter assays, or MPRA.
MPRA.
Right. We can think of MPRA as a high-throughput, highly multiplexed functional screening system. They didn't just observe the sequences computationally, they physically synthesized short 200 base pair segments of DNA, each containing one of these specific variants.
They actually built them.
Exactly. They placed these segments upstream of a minimal promoter and a reporter gene within a circular piece of DNA called a plasmid. And crucially, they tagged every single construct with a unique 20 base pair barcode.
So the barcode acts as a direct identifier for the variant being tested. If the cell reads the regulatory sequence and decides to transcribe the reporter gene, it also transcribes the barcode into RNA.
That is the core mechanism. They introduced these massive plasmid libraries into five diverse human cell lines.
Which ones?
Specifically blood, liver, brain, colon, and lung cells. After letting the cells incubate, they extracted the RNA and sequenced it. By counting the ratio of RNA barcodes to the original DNA barcodes in the library, they could measure the exact regulatory activity of every single sequence simultaneously.
Wow.
Yeah, if a specific variant acted as an active enhancer or repressor, the barcode counts would spike or plummet relative to the beta plane.
It's a brilliant way to cut through the statistical noise. Instead of just guessing based on population data, they forced the cells to functionally demonstrate which sequences possessed regulatory power. It's like leaning in with delicate instruments to listen to a whispering cry, every barcode poised, just waiting to hear a clear voice.
And they did hear it. One by one, the margins glowed. A subset stepped into the light.
How many?
What's fascinating here is that out of the roughly 220,000 variants tested, the assay confidently identified 13,121 as true high-confidence functional switches.
13,000 came alive.
Exactly. They categorized these as trait-associated regulatory variants, or TARVs. We moved entirely away from statistical correlation and established a functional causal map for over 13,000 specific single-letter changes.
Identifying the active switches is a massive achievement, but finding the switch is only half the battle. We need to know how it works. When we look at a single nucleotide change, say, an A swapping to a G, why does that physically alter the cell's behavior?
Well, the study data shows that about 69% of these active TARVs operate by disrupting a known motif.
A docking station.
Right. The term motif refers to a specific sequence pattern that transcription factor proteins recognize and bind to. Transcription factors are the physical machinery that turns genes on and off. If a genetic mutation alters the optimal sequence of that motif, the binding affinity drops and the regulatory activity changes.
So for that 69%, The biological mechanism was straightforward. The mutation physically broke a known docking station. However, that left 31% of the active variants completely unexplained.
A total mystery.
They were definitively altering gene expression in the assay, but they did not map to any recognized transcription factor binding sites. Here's where it gets really interesting. The researchers didn't leave that 31% as an unresolved anomaly. To map the unknown mechanisms, they selected 136 of these regulatory elements and performed a technique called saturation mutagenesis.
Saturation mutagenesis is an incredibly exhaustive approach. For a given regulatory sequence, they systematically changed every single base pair to every other possible nucleotide.
They saturation called each base.
They really did. If the sequence is 200 letters long, they synthesize hundreds of variations, mutating position 1 to the 3 other possibilities, then position 2, and so on. By running this comprehensive library through the MPRA again, they generate a high-resolution base-by-base map. They map the fingerprints in a steady frame.
They essentially forced the DNA to reveal its own blueprint by seeing which exact mutations broke the system and which ones didn't.
And the resolution they achieved was remarkable. By analyzing the functional footprint generated by the saturation mutagenesis, they unmasked the mechanism for 91% of those previously cryptic, non-canonical variants. 91% of mysteries now wear a name.
That is incredible.
They found that many of these mutations were actually creating entirely novel binding sites that hadn't been documented, or they were subtly altering the binding sites for repressor proteins rather than activators.
That transition from having an unknown mechanism to mapping it down to the single nucleotide is incredibly satisfying. I know the paper highlights a few specific genes where this high-resolution mapping revealed some complex biological dynamics.
Yes, one of the most striking examples involved a gene called CDHR3. Through the saturation mutagenesis, they isolated a variant that created a highly specific binding site requiring two distinct transcription factors, SRY and SOX9. The biological context here is critical. SOX9 is broadly expressed, but the SRY gene is located exclusively on the Y chromosome.
Which means the SRY protein is only present in male X cells.
Exactly. The assay demonstrated that this specific variant dramatically altered gene expression, but only in the liver cell line derived from an XY donor. When tested in XX blood cells, which lack the SRY protein, the variant was functionally silent.
Wow.
The genetic sequence contained the potential, but it required a specific transcellular environment, in this case, sex-dependent transcription factors, to actually execute the command. It demonstrates that the regulatory code is highly state-dependent.
That completely reorients how we should think about genetic risk. It's not a static blueprint that universally causes disease. It's a dynamic program interpreted differently depending on the cellular environment. And that complexity extends even further when we consider how these variants interact with each other. We frequently default to a single variant, single effect mindset.
We do.
But the data reveals these switches don't always operate in isolation. Sometimes nearby positions conspire. Their effects are not lone or tame.
That's a phenomenon called epistasis at the microregulatory level. Epistasis occurs when the effect of one genetic variant is dependent on or modified by the presence of another variant. To test this, they designed constructs containing pairs of variants located near each other within the same regulatory element.
And what did they find?
They found that about 11% of these paired regulatory variants exhibited significant epistatic interactions. Their combined functional output was drastically different from simply adding their individual effects together. We are looking at the twist of paired up flame.
If we think about this in terms of circuitry or computer programming, it's essentially a series of logic gates. Instead of a simple on-off switch, the genome uses AND or RNAs to regulate transcription.
That is a highly accurate analogy. The researchers documented the ESS2 locus, which is associated with DeGeorge syndrome. They identified two specific variants in this region. When tested individually, each variant produced a very mild increase in transcription. But when both variants were present on the same allele,
fulfilling an AND logic gate.
Exactly. The resulting transcription was massively amplified, far beyond a simple additive model. The variants compounded each other's effects. They act as an amplifier.
And the implications for polygenic risk scores and drug development seem massive here. If a pharmaceutical company is trying to target a specific disease pathway, and they only focus on a single variant identified in a gene OAS, they might completely miss the actual mechanism if the disease state requires that non-linear AND gate to trigger.
The data strongly supports that concern. Another example they highlighted was the THBS2 locus, which is associated with blood pressure regulation. In this instance, the individual variants had almost zero regulatory impact on their own.
Silent lines again.
Right. However, when both mutations were present together, they perfectly aligned to construct a brand new functional binding site, a Jun motif. A single point mutation was physically insufficient to recruit the transcription factor, but the two co-conspirators built the docking station together. What stands out to you when considering this nonlinear genetic architecture?
What stands out is the sheer computational challenge it presents for the future of diagnostics. If 11% of these local variants operate through unpredictable, nonlinear interactions, it means our current additive models for calculating genetic risk are likely underestimating the complexity of human disease.
Absolutely.
It makes the necessity of these high-throughput functional assays obvious because you simply cannot predict an entirely new Jun motif forming without physically testing the combination.
The regulatory grammar is undeniably complex, and ignoring these epistatic interactions means leaving a significant portion of disease heritability unexplained.
So what does this all mean? We have a system capable of testing hundreds of thousands of variants, we've mapped over 13,000 functional switches, and we've proven we can decode the epistatic logic gates. Does this mean the MPRA approach has fundamentally solved the GW's bottleneck?
The assay is incredibly powerful, but we have to be realistic about its physical limitations. The precision of the mapping is exceptional. They calculated an 82 to 83% accuracy rate for correctly identifying true positive causal variants within their high confidence set. Precision climbs, you could say.
But full recall waits just outside the door.
Exactly. The recall rate is a different story. The researchers transparently note that the MPRA only captured about 15 to 20% of the total causal variants known to exist at these well-studied loci.
That is a significant gap. If the assay has an 82% precision rate, why is the overall recall hovering around 15 to 20%? Where is the remaining functional activity hiding that the MPRA can't detect?
The limitation lies in the physical nature of the assay itself. The MPRA uses short 200 base pair segments of DNA on small circular plasmids, but inside a human nucleus, DNA does not exist as naked, fragmented circles.
It's packed tightly.
Right, it's tightly wound around histone proteins into a complex 3D structure called chromatin. The native genome is heavily regulated by epigenetic markers like DNA methylation and specific histone modifications that simply do not exist on an artificial plasmid. Chromatin and tissues hide some lore.
So the assay is testing the raw sequence potential, but it's missing the massive layer of physical structural regulation that governs how the genome actually operates in vivo.
Precisely the issue. Native chromatin folds into complex 3D loops where an enhancer region might be located a megabase away from its target promoter, but physically touches it due to structural folding.
And a plasmid assay just can't replicate those long-range interactions.
It can't. Furthermore, they only screened 5 specific cell lines. If a variant's regulatory function is restricted to a highly specialized cell, say, a specific subtype of retinal neuron or a rare immune cell, it will appear completely silent in a generalized liver or lung cell line.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the 15 to 20% recall isn't a failure of the study. It's a clear definition of the current technological frontier. They've successfully mapped the sequence level logic. The next phase of the science will require scaling this functional testing into native chromatin environments and across hundreds of different specialized cell states. Every lit up switch is one less thing we need to ignore.
That is the necessary progression. The study validates the MPRA methodology for high confidence discovery. They have provided a verified functional map for 13,000 switches, which immediately gives researchers highly specific targets for therapeutic intervention. We don't have to wait for the perfect 3D chromatin model to start utilizing the data we've successfully mapped today.
And the paper actually provides a tangible example of that clinical utility regarding glycosylated hemoglobin, or HbA1c, which is a critical diagnostic marker for monitoring diabetes.
The translation to human health in the HbA1c example is really compelling. The researchers analyzed a fairly common genetic variant designated RS11148279. In their functional assay, this common variant disrupted a known GATA motif, which resulted in a minor but measurable reduction in regulatory activity.
Okay.
Because they had performed the exhaustive saturation mutagenesis on this specific regulatory element, they possessed the functional footprint for every possible mutation at that site, not just the common one.
They weren't just looking at the single mutation that happened to be prevalent in the population. They had generated a predictive model for mutations that might be incredibly rare or even undiscovered.
And their saturation map clearly predicted that a different highly specific point mutation at that exact location or within the immediately adjacent cofactor binding sites would trigger a massive reduction in gene expression, far exceeding the effect of the common variant.
So what did they do with that prediction?
Armed with that functional prediction, they queried the UK Biobank, which houses the genomic data of 500,000 individuals.
They used the MPRA data as a diagnostic targeting system. They knew exactly which theoretical sequence to look for in the massive population database.
They identified 39 individuals in the UK Biobank who carried those exact rare mutations predicted by the saturation map. When they analyzed the clinical data for those 39 people, the results perfectly validated the assay.
Incredible.
Just as the laboratory model predicted, those individuals exhibited dramatically lower baseline HbA1c levels compared to the broader population, with many showing decreases of a full standard deviation or more.
That fundamentally changes the paradigm of clinical genetics. Historically, we identify a rare mutation in a patient, and then we spend years trying to figure out what it does. This study proves that we can map the sequence to function logic beforehand. When a patient walks into a clinic with an entirely novel, undocumented mutation, we won't have to guess.
No guessing required.
We can cross-reference it against a saturation mutagenesis map and immediately understand the mechanistic impact on the cell's transcription machinery. It is a massive step forward for predictive, personalized medicine. We carry this small victory into every test and field.
It accelerates the diagnostic timeline immensely. It moves the field from passively observing statistical associations in large cohorts to actively utilizing mechanistic predictive models to understand individual patient biology. We are beginning to read the regulatory genome not just as a sequence of nucleotides, but as a fully decipherable operating system. These sequence-to-function maps will guide the hands that heal.
Let's briefly recap the immense ground we have covered. We examined how researchers utilize massively parallel assays to sift through hundreds of thousands of statistical GWA signals, functionally validating over 13,000 specific regulatory switches. 13,000 came alive. We discussed how saturation mutagenesis unmasked the hidden mechanisms of non-coding DNA, revealing a dynamic system dependent on cellular context and complex epistatic logic gates.
From quiet letters to the songs that help a cell survive.
Exactly. And finally, we saw how these high-resolution functional maps can be leveraged to predict rare clinical phenotypes, moving us closer to truly personalized genomic medicine.
This raises an important question for you to consider as we conclude. If we now possess the high-resolution, single nucleotide mapping required to predict exactly how a variant alters disease risk, and we know the exact mechanism by which a regulatory sequence fails, how long until we transition from merely reading this diagnostic map to utilizing tools like CRISPR to actively rewrite the faulty code in living patients?
That is the logical and incredibly profound next step for this technology. The leap from comprehensive reading to precise writing is the upcoming frontier in genomic medicine. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. Whether you were analyzing the molecular logic gates of your own cells or tracking the broader advancements in the field, there's always more to learn. Keep asking rigorous questions, keep demanding the underlying mechanisms, and we'll be here to help you unpack the data. See you next time.
Bright screens, tracing letters in the code. Hundreds of thousand whisper, waiting for the road. We watch the tiny changes, trying to tell which ones explode. Silent lines that hold a promise, folded in the ode. One by
code poise. Map the switches, find
saturation, called each base, fingerprints and steady frame. 91% of mysteries now wear a name, but some nearby positions conspire their effects not alone or tame. About 11 in 100 show the twist of paired up flames.